Now, Monday, February 22nd is the date for the third and final installment of the Lochgar Virtual Experience webinar. Contributors include astronaut candidate Dr. Nora Patton and archaeoastronomer Dr. Frank Prendergast, who joins me on the phone. Good morning to you, Frank.
Very good morning, Trevor. Nice to hear from you.
Frank, what timescale are we talking about when we speak about the Lochgar Great Stone Circle?
Well, in archaeological time, we're going back to what's called the Neolithic or New Stone Age. And broadly, that extends from about, it began about 4,000 BC and goes right up to 2,500 BC. So we're talking broadly for Lochgar about 5,000 years ago.
Okay, and what kind of monument is it?
It's technically called an embanked stone circle. And what that means, very simply, is that you have a perfect circle at Lochgar of upright stones retained by an external bank. And the bank is nearly 10 metres deep, and it's elevated. So around this magical space, you have a very large flat area, and the floor was artificially raised by earth from archaeological digs, we know this. And on the top of the embankment, you can actually stand and look inwards onto this lower space in, down below. And it is an amazing space. It is the largest stone circle in the country with a diameter of about 45 metres. So I think, as I was saying to you yesterday, Trevor, Donegal has a slightly smaller circle, Belchany, very famous as well. But that's smaller by about 1 metre. So Limerick 1, Donegal 0 in my books.
Okay. The people who built this great stone circle, they had a certain idea in mind. I mean, the design of it isn't an accident.
Oh, no. And right throughout Ireland, we have there's about nearly 370 stone circles in Ireland and about 700 across the landmass of Britain. So proportionately, we have actually got a very high number. And there are different types which in archaeology we classify broadly according to the number of stones in the ring and also by their size. Now, Lochgar and Grange stone circle is a very impressive place indeed. And it is the largest in the country. And the majority are much, much smaller. And all of them have a circle of stones whose number varies according to their type. And the majority are in the southwest part of Ireland as well, which is also interesting geographically. And these were places that, generally speaking, are thought of as places of ceremony and ritual, and sometimes associated with the ancestors and the dead as well, because there have been excavated a very small number of burials in some stone circles, but very few. But in the case of Grange, intensive archaeological excavation in the 1950s by Professor Sean O'Reardon and by Dr. Rose Cleary from UCC more recently has shown that there was no habitation and no burials inside this space. So it was used for something else. And that something else has to be the big question, because we don't have the written record. There is no book. There's no manuscript. So we do rely to a large extent on interpretation. And I think we're safe to say that such a large flat space must have been designed for assembly and gathering. And I published a paper on Lochgar back in 2015. And I kind of included in the title, A Circle for All Seasons, because there was no strong indication in terms of the architecture of the monument as to how it might have been used at a particular time of year. So in that sense, because of its size and its largeness and its capacity to hold a very large number of people, not only inside the flat space, but probably and possibly also standing on the bank, looking inwards, that this was a place where people gathered. And in archaeology, we tend to think of all stone monuments as being associated with the dead, because stone had longevity. It had permanence. And they were built to last, these monuments. And boy, have they lasted. In this case, 5,000 years, and it's as perfect today as it was when it was built. What could you say about architecture elsewhere lasting that long? Hardly any at all. So assembly and maybe commemorating the dead and the ancestors, because that must have been a very powerful role in the kind of role of everyday people's lives at those times. Now, whether they gathered in the midsummer for festivals, midwinter for festivals, or times in between, we can't exactly be sure. But I think it's very safe to say that gatherings would have taken place at Lochgar, at Grange, in the stone circles, regularly and repeatedly. And when you repeat actions like that, you can bring in the word ritual. Sometimes the word religion is used, but let's put inverted commas on that because we don't know what the belief system was. So I think the word ritual is a far safer term.
Okay. I referred in the introduction, archaeoastronomer. I mean, you told me to put the two words or take the two words apart for a moment just to explain the what that means. What's the link then between them?
Well, in terms of you have archaeobotany, you have all sorts of different specializations within archaeology. And archaeoastronomy is something that is a specialized discipline that looks at how people in the past would have engaged with their sky. And it's very solid to say and secure to say that people would have engaged with the sky. And this is where we come to the webinar, which Kate Harold, who is the manager at Loch Gur, and the great work that they and the development board of the Cooperative Development Board at Loch Gur, they've had the wisdom to actually introduce a series of three webinars, and this is the final one. And the final one, we're going to take a very kind of a scientific approach. And we have two other speakers, Dr. Niall Smith from Blackrock Castle Observatory in Cork, who's a champion of dark sky, and Nora Patton, Dr. Nora Patton from Limerick University, who's also a great, a well-known scientist as well. And between us, we're going to take on the subject of the place and the science at Loch Gur in terms of what it now means to people to go there and the kind of excitement and exhilaration and learning that you can extract from a site. But my tack will be, as an archaeoastronomer, to try and reimagine how people in 3000 BC, 5000 years ago, might have engaged with the sky that they saw then. A slightly different sky, because with computers these days, we can correct the sky view for what was exactly seen 5000 years ago. So star positions would have been in a different place. The sun at the solstices and setting at the solstices, rising and setting, slightly different place. And we can relate that sky map, if you like, and superimpose it down onto the stone circle. And this would be the kind of work that I would do in terms of simulating what was the view in prehistory. And then to try and sort of see, are there things which resonate then with us now in terms of our understanding of modern astronomy and what was their perceptions of the sky in a cultural sense? So it's a terrific area of endeavor and science. It's a global research area, archaeoastronomy. And there are scholars and scientists at this subject all over the world, at all of the great archaeological sites in Ireland and elsewhere. So trying to understand people's perception and understanding and their relationship with the sky as part of their environmental experience and their lived experience at those times.
Okay, you were saying that Loch Gur is going to achieve or is on the way to achieving dark sky status.
It is indeed, and I'm very, very excited, as others are. In Ireland, we have already in Kerry a dark sky region at Ballycroy up in Mayo. We have the National Park up there designated as a dark sky area as well. And back in 2014, my goodness, it's about 8 years ago, the phone rang for me, and it was my current boss, Kate Harold, who said, Frank, I want you to come down and see if you can separate the fact from the fiction at Loch Gur in terms of any astronomical meanings that the circle may have. So on my bicycle down to Limerick, and I undertook some work, published a paper. But when I was there and began to think about it and looked at the visitors and the way they engaged with the monument as I was doing my work, it became clear to me that this was a monument for experience and to be in a place and to kind of savour the whole meaning of the landscape in the widest possible sense. Loch Gur is shielded by a couple of hills which rise dramatically above the lake, shielding it from the lights of Limerick City. And that gave me a clue. I said, let's come back and have a festival as Cater had organised, and we'll have some talks. And at one of those festivals where we gave lectures and we had fantastic time, we went outside to undertake a bit of sky watching. And it was during that when the Shannon astronomical people were there, and we all said, oh my God, how dark is this place? And it is darker than anywhere, that you would expect in the area. because of the proximity of the light of Limerick City in particular. But topographically, the hills were shielding the whole area from light pollution. And that got me thinking, and I wrote about this, in terms of preserving the dark sky at Loch Gur. And then the Shannonside Astronomy Club came in and did some test measurements of brightness and darkness and light pollution. And more latterly, Paul Ryan, who is a huge, has played a huge part in this, began to take on the very detailed work of taking measurements, scientific measurements. And he set about doing this and recorded the darkness at Loch Gur. And the next stage was then to follow suit in terms of the other dark sky entities on the island and make a submission to the International Dark Sky Association for a designation. And that is now well underway and very soon about to be submitted. And we're terribly excited by this. So Niall Smith, and then there's Brian Espy, who's a professor of Trinity in astrophysics, and myself and the Ballycroy team and Loch Gur, we're all collaborating on this. And we all support each other, and it's fantastic. But the drum that I beat is that an archaeological landscape, which Loch Gur is a champion of, it is an archaeological landscape of outstanding importance, needs to be protected from light pollution, insofar as it can, and to get that balance right. From that point of view, Limerick County Council are now on board, and the government department would be obviously supporting this initiative as well, and the Minister for Heritage, and Kate Harold and her team and Paul Ryan collectively are now hugely involved in this great initiative to bring dark sky designation to Loch Gur. And what that will mean is that we can further market the whole site and the area as an area of special importance to come and visit, especially at nighttime, where you can see in that area, and I've experienced this, dramatic views of the heavens. Now, if you bear in mind, in prehistory, the views of the night sky would have had no artificial light pollution. It would have only had what's called anthropogenic or human factors like fires and stuff like that. Today, of course, we have all our towns and villages surrounding any area, Loch Gur, no exception. In prehistory, in a pristine sky, you would have seen probably 5,000-6,000 stars in the heavens. Today, in most areas of the country, which are all light polluted to varying degrees, you probably can only see a few hundred at best. And certainly in Dublin City and Limerick, any big city, that might be only a few dozen of the brightest of stars, and obviously the sun and moon as well. So that makes Loch Gur special. And we've caught it in time. And with the support of Limerick County Council in particular, and the initiative undertaken by Kate Harold and the team and Paul Ryan, collectively, we can now, I think, ensure that the dark sky, as an element of our heritage, and that's how it should be seen and viewed, can be protected and conserved for future generations.
Okay. All right. It is Monday, February 22nd, the third Loch Gur virtual experience webinar. And archaeoastronomer Dr. Frank Prendergast will be joined by Dr. Nora Patton and others. Frank, thanks very much for enlightening me, and thanks very much for joining us this morning.
My pleasure.